Thanks, Ruth. Morning, everybody. Good to see you here. My name's Matthew. I'm the lead pastor. It's Lent. It's the second Sunday of Lent today. We're in a series called Creating Safe Space. I'll talk more about that in a moment. But I mentioned last week, one of the we've got these challenge groups that we're starting. Those will all start next week. Again, I'll just share a little bit more about that in a second. But another one of the challenges we're taking on for this season of Lent is the challenge of giving. And you'll probably see on the back of the bulletin or the flyer that you got, you'll see the most recent kind of record of giving. And we are at 100% of our goal for giving this year, which is so thank you so much. We had a great week last week. But you always know there's a but coming, right? So we have set higher goals for Lent, right? So, you know, that our giving varies throughout the year, and we kind of pretty much know how that varies. So there are certain times of the year, and this is one of them, where we set higher goals. So, you know, that's a challenge for us during this season. So just want to encourage everybody to give generously, to really, you know, in this season of reflection, to think about our giving to this community that we're part of and our commitment in that, reflected in that kind of way. And also, each week we're going to be sharing from different areas of our church. Different people are going to come up. We heard about Guatemala last week, and this morning we're going to hear about high school and middle school as a way to hopefully inspire us to see, you know, what our money is doing in terms of creating safe space for other people, both within our community and without, and also to remind us of this challenge, to keep this challenge in front of us of generosity and giving, because, as I said, this season especially, we've got these great challenging goals that we're taking on regarding our finances. So without further ado, let's welcome Trish. She's going to come up, and you have a friend with you, so you're going to introduce. Trish is on our pastoral team. She leads, oversees our high school and middle school area. So let's welcome Trish.
Good morning. Thank you. So you stole my first line. I'm Trish. I'm on the pastoral team, and I work with the middle school and high school students over in the barn. So one of my little titles is Pastor of the Barn. I like that. This is Paige Shelburne, one of our high school student leaders, here to help me with this announcement. We're here to update you on our ministry and to tell you why your giving is important to us and our groups. For those of you that are a little older, do you remember your middle school and high school days? Okay, good. Wow, there's a lot of head nods. All right. Some of you might remember your fun and carefree days of hanging out with friends and not having to worry about the details of life or the worries of the world. Maybe some of you remember the awkwardness of changing into a different person that you and your family didn't recognize, struggling to figure out how you fit or what God was calling you to be. Or maybe you were somewhere in between. We focus our energies over in the barn on events and retreats that allow us to provide a place for our students to come, to be themselves, to feel loved by the adult leaders that we have there, and to have the space to explore themselves and their faith. Paige is going to share a little bit about why youth group has been important to her.
Hello, my name is Paige, as Trish introduced. Good morning. So middle school and high school meant just the world to me, and I hadn't realized that until maybe a couple months ago or so, just reflecting back on my time here. Coming into middle school was really hard for me. I had a big injury in elementary school. I lost all my confidence. I didn't know who I was, and I was pretty young, so I don't think not many people were going through that same change as I was. I got into the middle school group, and I was afraid to talk because I didn't want to say something wrong or hurt someone. So Trish was very persistent in trying to make me talk, like when we had our lessons in middle school, and I never wanted to. So one day she called on me, and I didn't know what to do. I was very scared. I had so many ideas in my head that I wanted to say, but I was so afraid I was going to hurt someone. So she called on me, and I could see her just staring at me like, talk, please, talk. And so I did, and so everything just started pouring out. It was a lesson about love and what does it mean to you. And I talked about all the different kinds of love, and I didn't realize after a couple minutes I was just rambling and just letting everything pour out. I didn't know what I was saying at that point because I just wasn't paying attention to it. I was really just speaking my heart. And I stopped, and I was just like, I am so sorry. I really apologized. I was frightened and terrified that I talked too much or I said something wrong. Trish looked at me, and she just said, why are you apologizing? Do not do that. And so I turned around just to make sure no one else was feeling hurt or anything. And everyone was just smiling, giving me eyes of encouragement. And it really just made me tear up. I'm tearing up about it right now. It meant so much to me. So ever since then, I've been opening up. And I've been such a confident person. Excuse me. Okay, I'm good. So, huh?
So ever since then, I've not been afraid to talk about what I think of the world, and the lessons that we have are just so meaningful because they really do bring out the life struggles that I think everyone goes through. We're talking about safe spaces right now, and that means a lot to me because in this world, I don't run into many of those. School, I have many good friends that I'm able to talk to, but other than that, I don't really have a place where I can go other than my family, maybe. So coming here every Sunday and having these talks about what a safe space means to you and being able to cherish these moments and talk about what I truly love with the people that I truly appreciate means so much to me. And so the middle school and high school group, it's done something for me that I don't think any other place could have done for me. So I really do appreciate it, and it just makes me the happiest person, and I can't not stop smiling when I'm here, and I don't think I ever want to stop smiling. Thank you. Okay.
I can't really follow that, but I have a few more things to say. So as a result of Paige just kind of coming out of her shell, so we have some adult, some high school student leaders that we've asked to kind of step up this year, and she's one of them. So I can, she's my go-to for, hey, Paige, want to talk with me on Sunday morning? Or, hey, Paige, can you make sure the high school group is, all knows about this and you get this person involved in that? So that's been kind of a neat thing that we've incorporated this year is our high school leaders. So your giving to Cedar Ridge really affects what we do over in the barn, and I just want to thank you for your giving and continue to provide that for us. Your resources help us to create that safe space over in the barn and here on retreats and events. Fun events like last night, we went to an escape room with the high school group. The middle school group sometimes goes to an adventure park climbing place where we get to bond together and challenge one another. Your resources help us provide food, which is really important for teenagers. Okay, so let's just put that out there. Please continue to pray for our ministry, for more adults to have a desire to plug into middle school and high school students' lives, for all of us in the barn to have a growing awareness of who God is and who He wants us to be, and for our leaders to have the wisdom and energy to care for our students during their ups and downs. If you have a desire to help out in our ministry in any way, from making food, again, which is essential to teenagers' happiness, helping out at an event or anything in between, just let me know. My information's on the back of the community flyer. Thank you again, and of course, please continue to give generously to Cedar Ridge. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. That was great. Thank you so much. Okay, so as I mentioned, we're in this series called Creating Safe Space. We have these challenge groups that are running, and that will begin next week and run for 3 weeks, right? So those challenge groups, you can find out about these. We have a handout outside on the table in the commons area. You can also see this handout online. But I'm just going to run through those challenges again for us, and we're going to be addressing each one of these beginning today over the next 4 weeks, right? But the groups don't start till next week. Simplifying life, so today that's the theme, right? Simplifying life to make space. Then next week we'll talk about being authentic, so creating safe space for ourselves so we can be our authentic selves. Becoming a safer person, so working at making safe space around us. And then reducing marginalization, which is the more sort of, I guess, outreach aspect of it, or the justice aspect of it, where we're thinking about people that we may or may not be connected to, but who feel marginalized, who don't feel safe, and being proactive about making safe space for people like that. And these groups will be meeting after each service, beginning next week, for 3 weeks. And we're encouraging everybody to get in one of these challenge groups, right? So one of these subjects might really appeal to you or might challenge you. It might feel uncomfortable to go to one of these groups, but that's probably a good sign, right? Because it's something that's challenging us, stirring us up. And then you will track with that group, that subject, for 3 weeks. So rather than moving on to another subject every week, we're going to be focusing on the same thing for 3 weeks, right? And so you have one of four choices. Also, we're encouraging discipleship groups. We had a discipleship group leaders meeting this past week, and we were sharing there about how discipleship groups have options of, you could disband for this season and go to those different groups. That's one option. Or to pick up one of these challenges as a group and go through that as a group. And each group is making a decision about that, over the next week or so. So The messages on Sunday are going to kind of address the issues, stir some things up, hopefully be somewhat challenging. And then, you know, obviously, if you want to get into more depth in that, go to the challenge group. Okay, our sort of icon for the series is the fox. A fox, right? I love foxes. And, you know, you could think about foxes from the point of view of foxes are kind of timid, right? They hide away. They're reclusive. They perhaps need safe space, right? We might feel like that. We might feel, man, I'm just hidden away. I daren't come out. They really are in need of safe space. But foxes are also predators, right? So if anybody here own chickens, a few of us own chickens. I don't, but I mean, I know a few people here do. Foxes are not chickens' best friend, right? So yeah, they have a bit of a reputation. So that perhaps is a we need to be safer people. Maybe foxes should sort of become vegetarian or something. I mean, the metaphor starts breaking down, but I think you get my point here, right? So we all have to change, right? We need to be safer people. But also foxes tend to get vilified, right? They're stereotyped as sly and cunning and, maybe sneaky and aggressive. And they've tended, I think in some cultures, be marginalized, right? So maybe foxes need to be looked after, restored. And again, the metaphors kind of break down, I realize that. But, that's some people have asked about, what's the fox doing up there on this creating safe space? Talking of foxes, we're going to look at a quick video clip here of a fox called Nick. And Nick is a sort of a con artist and has a friend, a police officer friend called Judy. And this is a clip from the movie Zootopia. We're thinking about this whole concept of simplifying life to make space today. And part of what we're going to talk about is slowing down. Now, Nick and Judy have to go to the DMV, to the, the MVA, to get a... Yeah, okay, you may have seen this clip before. So we're just going to look at this clip and think slowing down, right? And what that feels like for many of us as we watch this clip. Let's run the clip.
Hitting the clock and every minute counts. Wait, they're all slots?
Because he's a sloth, he can't be fast. I thought in Zootopia anyone could be anything.
Flash, flash, 100-yard dash.
Buddy, it's nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
Hey, Flash, I'd love you to meet my friend. Darwin, I've forgotten your name.
Officer Judy Hobbs, CPD, how are you?
I am doing just
fine.
As well as I can be. What?
Hang in there.
Can I do?
Well, I was hoping you could run a plate.
For you.
Well, I was hoping you could.
Today.
Well, I was hoping you could run a plate for us. We are in a really big hurry.
Sure. What's the plate?
29T.
Number.
29THD03. Zero. Three.
Hey, Flash, want to hear a joke?
No!
Sure.
What do you call a three-humped camel?
I don't know. What do you call a...
Three-humped camel.
Three-humped camel.
Pregnant.
Very funny. Can we please just focus on the test?
Hey.
Wait.
Priscilla.
Oh, no. Yes? Flash?
What? Do.
No.
You called.
A three-humped camel? Pregnant. Okay, great. Three. We got it. Please.
Pumped. Here.
Yes.
You.
Thank you.
219
HD03.
Go.
It's registered to Tundertown Limo Service. A limo took Otterton, and the limo's in Tundertown. It's in Tundertown!
Way to hustle, bud. I love you. I owe you.
Hurry. We gotta beat the rush hour in. It's night.
Okay. So I think we can all relate to that video, right? I mean, the laughter, it's funny, it's hilarious. We can all relate to it. Perhaps in a couple of ways. I mean, one is it's pretty painful to watch it. I mean, it's funny, but it's painful. I was actually thinking in showing that maybe I need to cut this down a little bit. You know, I mean, because it just sort of goes on. And I was thinking, well, you're used to hearing me talk all the time, so I mean, we'll be safe. But you know, I think at least a couple of levels we can relate to that, right? We know we live in this ridiculously complex life where we have to, you know, life has become complex and difficult, and we have to move through it at such a fast pace. And we get frustrated because people aren't necessarily always moving at the same speed as us. And it can feel, we've experienced some of that pain. I mean, anybody who's been to the MVA has experienced some of that kind of pain, right? And we experience it in all kinds of other aspects of life, both institutionally, but also relationally, right? Because there's so much to do. But on the other hand, also, I think we've experienced that sort of not only people not going fast enough for us, but we've experienced other people thinking that we're not going fast enough, right? We feel the pressure to go fast. We feel the pressure to keep up for all kinds of different reasons. And we can sometimes feel that we're failing abysmally at that. So I think some of what makes that so funny is because it's very close to home. As I mentioned, today we're going to be talking about this whole idea of simplifying life to make space, and part of that is we're going to talk about slowing down. But we've got to sort of ask ourselves a question, I guess, really, which is, you know, slowing down for what? Making space for what? You know, and let me say, the challenge group for this subject is not going to be like a time management workshop. You know, we're all going to come out of this, we're all experts at just better at managing our time. So what is it about? Well, I want to go back to what we don't have this on the slides, but I want to read a scripture that we looked at last week, which we look at very often here for good reason. It's when Jesus says, "Come to me," this is from Matthew 11, "all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And we looked at that last week again in a more modern translation called The Message, which I think has some great language to it. "Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." And I think that's something we long for, right? That is what we're making space for. Okay, so we're making space for this healthy whole life. If we could relate at all to that video, if we could relate at all to the words of Jesus there, then probably we find ourselves longing for meaningful, purposeful life. So what we're talking about here is making space, not so that we can just get more efficient and more effective, but to experience that kind of real life that Jesus talked about. And that life it's got to be more than religion, right? In other words, not only are we not just trying to become better at time management, we're not trying to make space to become more religious and just sort of make lots of time so we can sit around reading our Bibles and praying and becoming more religious in some kind of way. No, probably a lot of the things we're doing already are really good things. If you think about becoming more healthy and whole, we're really talking about making space for ourselves to receive more of God's love and more of that healthy life that Jesus is talking about, and also sharing that life with others. And we can share that life in many of the ways that we're already living life. So in our work situations, families, neighborhoods, it's not about withdrawing from all those things, but bringing a renewed life, a renewed energy to those things, to those places of life for us, but also addressing this, the inner issues, the things that drive us. We might have to look at some things within us and create space for us internally to experience more of that love, experience more of that life that Jesus talks about, and set aside time to practice experiencing that in order that our lives could be more meaningful and purposeful, and would live this kind of life that Jesus is talking about, this life of meaning and purpose. And so, you know, it's going to result in some changes. Clearly, some things do need to change. There's probably some things we do need to stop doing. We do need to rethink. And particularly reflecting it on our inner motivation. So what we're going to just do briefly today, and as I said, these messages on Sundays are going to kind of just address a few of the issues related to these challenge subjects. But if you really want to get into this, I'd encourage you to really connect with that challenge group. And Melanie Griffin's going to be leading that. She'll be leading us in communion in a moment, and she'll share a little bit about that group. But I want to take briefly a look at a couple of aspects that seem to make our lives really complex, and ways in which, therefore, we might be able to think about simplifying a little bit. Those two things are our busyness. In other words, we just have too much stuff to do and not enough time to do it in. I think probably that's a common challenge for all of us to some degree. And the other thing is we have too much stuff, right? We have stuff that in our lives that kind of fills up our lives, and, you know, possessions and things like that, that not only sort of distract us a bit, perhaps, from a really meaningful, purposeful life, but also mean we have to spend time making the money to get those things or to maintain those things. And that's a particular challenge, I think, when you live in a place like this where it's really expensive to live, right? So time and money and all those things become very, there's a lot of overlap there. So let's just think a moment about this issue of business. We've got to sort of pick off these two issues, and then we'll look at some internal motivation, internal motivations as well. The issue of business, there's nothing wrong with business per se, right? We've probably all experienced times in our lives where it's been really exhilarating to be busy. We've got a deadline coming up or a particular project, and we're working on it, and we're working hard and fast, and we're putting a lot of hours in, and it's really fulfilling, and we have this great sense of accomplishment. We meet our goal. We have a sense of fulfillment and celebration afterwards. And in fact, in those moments, it's probably easier for us to rest afterwards because we have a sense of accomplishment. We did something, and we kind of deserve the rest. But there's another kind of busyness, which, again, I think we've probably all experienced way too often, which is that we're just going through life at 90 miles an hour. We're barely getting anything done because we're just skimming the surface, and it seems like we get nothing done well. We don't feel fulfilled. We feel very frustrated. And whenever we finish something, we don't have the sense of fulfillment, so we don't feel we've earned the right to rest, and we just move on to the next thing because we're looking for fulfillment. We want, maybe if I accomplish that next thing, I'll feel better about myself. And we're racing through life like that. And, I can certainly relate to that. I think most of us can relate to that. And the issue really is not so much whether we're busy at any one moment in time, but the fact that we tend to be busy all the time. And we live life in this busy, quick, fast mode. And the culture is driving us that way, right? And putting all this kind of pressure on us. So then we internalize that, right? We internalize it. And so then we're self-motivated in our busyness. You can think about it like this. Like if you think about speedometers or pace, you know, think about vehicles, they're not designed to run at 100 miles an hour all the time. You think about it in terms of gears. If you remember the old days of stick shifts? I don't know, some of us may drive stick shifts. But, you have all these different gears, but you have to have different gears for different situations. You can't just be in top gear all the time. You can't be in fast gear, fast mode all the time. I love horses, right? Horses are beautiful animals. I used to ride a little bit in my younger days. But horses, they walk, they trot, they canter, and they gallop, right? There's a group of horses on a stretch where I walk my dog pretty much every day. These beautiful horses. And horses, most of the time, are stood around, right? Walking around, nibbling the grass. That's how they spend their lives. There's one particular horse in this place where I go to, he's a super friendly guy, and when he sees us, he'll kind of break into a trot, and he'll come over. That's about as enthusiastic as it gets. And then he'll come over and we'll scratch behind his ears, or I do. My dog can't do that. But and then occasionally, though, I'll see them, they kind of get a bit excited and they're having some fun and they canter around the field. And occasionally you see them gallop. They're really excited about something and they're just having fun. But they're not galloping all the time. I think part of the problem is this: galloping is great, but probably most of the time we should be walking, right? And we've just got our lives out of balance. And so rest, just homing in on perhaps first gear or that sort of walk mode, rest is a crucial aspect of our lives that often gets neglected, often goes by the wayside. Let's think about this from a scriptural point of view. Let's go back to some of the early scriptures in the Hebrew scriptures, Exodus. You know, one of the Ten Commandments. Pretty strong statements here in Exodus 20 are about rest. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or your daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your town. So kind of all options covered. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Now, I think partly because of this language, partly because this was steeped in the early Hebrews culture, it became a very religious thing, right? It became almost like a guilt type thing. Like, actually, many of these commandments tend to sort of come across almost as you better not do this and you better not do that, you know. And this can almost come across as a burden rather than a gift. It can come across as guilt rather than freedom. And let me say from the outset here, nobody should be feeling guilted about going too fast or being too busy or having the kind of life we have. It's actually a recognition that we're under this burden. Like Jesus said, come to me and rest because I know how burdened you are. And Jesus is bringing us freedom, not guilt. Now, around the Sabbath especially, Jesus got challenged himself. If we go to the book of Mark, we'll see a little story about the Sabbath. One Sabbath, he was going through the grain fields. As they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, what are they doing? Why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" That amounted to work to them. And Jesus said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need of food? He entered the house of God when Abiathar was high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for anyone but the priests to eat. And he gave some to his companions. And then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for humankind and not humankind for the Sabbath.'" Right? So it's important that we realize this is a gift. This is an opportunity. This is an invitation into freedom, not something where it's like, we better do this, we better do that, because, you know, that's going to earn us favor with God. And I think this issue of rest and slowing down, you know, it's part of our vision. Slow down from the frenzied pace of life. If that becomes something where we're pointing the finger at one another or pointing the finger at ourselves, that's we've totally lost the meaning of it. Just as Jesus here is saying, "You guys, you religious Pharisees, you've lost the meaning. The Sabbath is not some religious law imposed upon us. It's a gift to us because we need rest. We need a different pace of life." And Jesus lived that, right? Jesus, the scriptures are full of situations where Jesus kind of checks out and chills out. We have an example of that here. "Yet the news about him spread all the more so that crowds of people came to hear him." We're talking about Jesus here. To be healed of their sicknesses. So Jesus is busy. Jesus is pressed upon. The culture is demanding things of Jesus. So he often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. And, you know, what I imagine there is that is going on there is that Jesus is withdrawing to experience this divine life that he's talking about, this real life. He's withdrawing in prayer to connect with God, to make this, to to rediscover his oneness, to experience that oneness, to be full of this divine life so he can go out into the world with renewed energy and renewed perspective and perhaps renewed wisdom to make choices about what to do and what not to do, rather than being just driven by the crowds, being driven by the culture, being driven by the forces around him, which is what so often happens to us. So rest is a supremely important part for us, and I'm just going to throw that out there as saying, I think most of us are getting nowhere near enough rest, right? Nowhere near enough rest. We need to find ways to simplify so we can make space to rest and make space to experience the divine life that Jesus is talking about, that Jesus did. Let me give you an example of a challenge for me personally. So this happens periodically. I just get busier and busier. I allow myself to get busier and busier. And so recently, for quite a while, I've not been taking a day off. So, I'm challenging myself as much as anybody else here. And I'm also, I'm not putting that on anybody else. That's me. That's my issue with the boundary, right? So it's a little, I'm busy with work and this is my work, right? So, but I'm not putting that out. Nobody's driving me. I have to put boundaries down. I have to make some decisions. But I don't make those right decisions because I'm driven by things like, well, compassion. That's a good thing. I want to help and I want to do a good job. But it's also driven by a sense of fear, guilt. What will people think about me if I don't do that, or I don't call them back, or I don't email back immediately, or I don't do this, I don't do the other? Again, not putting that on anybody else. That's my issue, right? It's totally my issue. Maybe a sense of self-importance. Well, this place can't survive without me. You know that already, of course, but no, right? How arrogant is that in one sense? It's that busyness, that lack of boundary is driven by some pretty dysfunctional things. We'll talk more about that in just a second, but I want to mention, the other thing I was talking about, which is not just we have too much stuff to do, but we have too much stuff. We're drawn, actually, I think, because we lack an experience of the divine life, this meaningful, fulfilling life that Jesus talks about, we're drawn by stuff. We think stuff's going to make us happy. Again, we'll dig way more into this in a challenge group. Jesus kind of got at this when he, in the Sermon on the Mount, chapter 6 of Matthew, he says, "Don't store up for yourself treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So Jesus, I don't think Jesus is saying, hey, think about heaven. It's going to be this place with streets paved with gold. And, I think Jesus is talking metaphorically here about the way of the world, and the way of God, the way of the divine life, the way of this beautiful life that we can live. And he's saying, look, you can invest your time and resources and efforts in stuff which just ultimately decay and don't lead to life. They're never satisfied. Or you can invest your time and energies and efforts in what's really meaningful. These heavenly things, if you like, these divine things, like relationships and growing as a person and serving others, which are all the criteria that research suggests make human beings happy. those are the things that we get value from, and it's not from money or stuff. So Jesus is challenging our internal motivations. He's saying, where your treasure is, there your heart is. So part of what we've got to think about is, where is our heart at? Where is our heart at? And I think Jesus clearly understands these longings we have for deep, meaningful life. Jesus uses another treasure metaphor later on in Matthew in chapter 13. He says, the kingdom of heaven, so that's one of the terms Jesus uses for this life we're talking about, this really rich, meaningful life that we all long for. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again. And then in his joy, he went and sold all he had and bought that field. So there's a deep longing. There's a sort of, oh, this is it. This is what I want. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it. So there's this deep longing. And Jesus recognizes that. Jesus sees that and is offering us an answer to that deep longing. He actually kind of uses analogies of hunger and thirst in John's Gospel in chapter 7. Oh, sorry, before we go there. Here's a certain irony, I think. You can keep that one up. Here's a certain irony that Jesus is saying you can have a full life, right? The thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. He's used some of those analogies already, right? But I have come that you may have life and have it to the full, right? So again, Jesus is not saying just totally check out of life and, do nothing and just sort of meditate for the rest of your life or something like that. I don't think Jesus is saying that kind of thing. But Jesus is saying, live life. You know, families, friends, neighbors, work, all the things that contribute to our life. I don't think that's the problem so much. It's what we're looking for in it and what drives us and drives our activities. That's where the problem lies, right? So there's a sort of paradox there because Jesus is offering full life, but it's a different kind of full life. So let's go to the next John passage. So here's Jesus on a great feast day, standing up and in the temple, and he says, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as Scripture has said, rivers of living water will flow from within them." By this he meant the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were later to receive. Up to that time, the Spirit had not been given, since Jesus had not yet been glorified. So there's this Spirit of God, this divine life, that Jesus is saying, come and drink from me. Come and drink it. And it's the inference is that, you know, it's not just for us, but as we drink this life in, as we experience this divine life, it flows out of us. We actually get to give it to others. Other people get to experience a different kind of life. So what making space is all about is making space for that kind of life, right? Making space for time and practice that can engage us with God, engage us with the Spirit of Christ, so that we can have that kind of life. We can have that kind of deep meaning. Now, there's a couple of implications, I think, there in what Jesus is saying. One is that since he's challenging us, and we're talking a lot about challenge during the season of Lent, since Jesus is challenging us about coming and drinking, the inference is that we may be drinking from other places. Maybe there are other ways we're trying to experience a deep, meaningful, fulfilled life. Jeremiah, the prophet, kind of gets at this early on in his writings. He says, "My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me." This is Jeremiah kind of speaking on behalf of God, if you like. "They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns," their own wells, "broken cisterns that cannot hold water." And you think just for a moment, as I am, about all the ways, sort of broken cisterns in my life, the different ways throughout my life over the years that I've tried to satisfy myself, I've tried to find meaning, or maybe I've tried to anesthetize myself from the fact that I don't really have meaning. And some of those things are very, very obvious, like we have addictive behaviors, substances, relationships, we put all our meaning into somebody else having to satisfy us, whether that's emotionally or sexually or whatever, you know, we get it. And some of those things are very obvious, right? They're very visible, tangible, and they're obviously dysfunctional. They're obviously problematic. And some of us may be struggling with those kinds of addictive behaviors in our lives. Some of them are a lot more subtle, right? Some of them are way more subtle than that. They are, going back to some of the things I was talking about, what makes me not take a day off? Well, it's fear, it's guilt, it's trying to please people, it's people having, giving people power over us, whether that's, you know, friends or bosses or spouses or whoever it is. We want to please them. We don't want to be thought badly of. We need to be needed. Maybe we've got kind of like savior complex, you know, where we just need to be needed. So that drives all these activities for us, and they're not healthy motivations. They're not, and it's going to result in us over time, if we really look at this, if we really are honest. And I think it behoves all of us, even with the good things we're doing, right? Because many of those bad motivations, lead us to do good things. So we have to, you know, that kind of hides it. You know, if we're in really dysfunctional repetitive sexual relationships, right, that most people say that's probably not very healthy. But if we're out, like, being good to people, like, I don't think anybody would say anything that I do that makes me busy is wrong or bad in terms of the context of my life and my role. But they can be driven by bad motivations. Do you get that? And that's what we've got to get at. We've got to slow down enough, I think, to be able to recognize what drives us and recognize that those are not necessarily evil things. Being needed, being loved, all those things there's nothing inherently wrong with us, but when it drives us into activity that we can't sustain or that wears us out or that makes us live an oppressed life rather than a free life, there's something wrong. I'll give a quick example of this. A few years ago, I took up the violin. My wife, I think it was about 3-4 years ago, my wife brought me a violin for Christmas because I love music and I've always wanted to play the violin, right? So, and you know, it's kind of a tricky thing to take up in your adult life, let me tell you. But I was really excited about it. But then the next year, she bought me a dog for Christmas and the dog kind of trumped everything. And so suddenly this dog's taken up all my time. And I was struggling to find time to practice violin. Now, what I began to realize, well, let me tell you, because along with the violin came a packet of lessons, as in, you know, with a person. And that person was a rather aggressive teacher, not very nurturing, not very particularly helpful teacher. Most of the other students were about 7 or 8 years old. I'm being vulnerable here, okay? So... and, you know, this guy would give me a lesson in the room, and then the next student would come in 5 minutes early and sort of sit there and wait, usually with their parents, while he's berating me about how useless I am, even to the point, at one point, hitting me with the bow, with the violin bow, right? I mean, now I look back, I should have said, what the heck are you doing? But in the moment, I was just like, sorry, you know, because I... So it was kind of... I felt under pressure. Not only that, so I would practice every day like crazy, but it wasn't really out of freedom and love for playing the violin anymore. It was now, that guy's going to, I've got that lesson coming up on Wednesday. If I haven't nailed this, I'm in big trouble and I'm going to be humiliated. Plus, every Christmas, there were recitals to do. And they are awful. They're just awful. And again, I mean, I'm at this recital with all these 7 and 8 year olds. So we sat around before we go on to do the recital, you know, one by one. And 7 or 8 year olds don't care, right? They're not nervous because they, and I would sit with them, try and educate them. Look, people are judging you. They really are judging, right? You just haven't learned that yet. You haven't learned that yet, but you're going to fail in life at some point. And you're going to realize that people are judging you. It's a merciless world out there. Of course, they didn't believe me. So they go out there. And there was one occasion where this young girl gets up. She was probably about 8. She gets up to play. And I found myself not exactly praying she would do really badly because I'm the next one up. And But I was thinking, oh, don't let her do too well because, you know, I'll just look awful after this. Of course, she knocks it out of the park. I get up there, it's mediocre at best, and I get the, you know, and people coming up, you know, the sympathetic applause, people coming up to me after and saying, oh, you're so brave to do that, you know, which sort of means you're so brave to make a complete fool of yourself as an adult in public. Right, so anyway, after a while, I decided I'm going to stop doing this, right? Now, I know... that probably sounds really selfish because I've withheld this prodigious talent from the world. When I'm retired, I'll pick up the violin again. And there was a part of it that I loved, but I realized I was being driven by a wrong motivation, right? A very wrong motivation. And it was like, oh, I don't have to do this. I don't have to impress my teacher. I don't have to impress anybody. I don't even have to impress myself because I didn't want to give up because I don't give up on things, you know, that kind of thing. And it was a good thing. What could be wrong with learning to play the violin? But it was coming from the wrong place. And I just made more room in my life by just saying no to that. And it was a good thing to say no to. So we have this, I think, opportunity, we have these opportunities to reflect at times like this, like during Lent, or when subjects like this come up, and just think through, practically speaking, what are our motivations? Why is our life the way it is? Rather than just accepting it and bemoaning it, and perhaps berating other people who make us busy or berating ourselves, what if we were just to reflect and think about how we could make some space, how we could make some time? Now, in a second, Melanie's going to come up and lead us in communion. But before we go there, we're going to come back to something we did last week, which is a centering prayer exercise. Because I think part of the challenge here is that we... our lives are just moving so fast, we don't even get to step off to think about why they're moving so fast. And some of that is related to our minds. You know, we talked last week about the fact that we have this commentary going on all the time in our heads, which is like, we better do that, that person might be mad at us, we better catch up on this, oh no, we're behind on this. We have these sort of, this flight of thought that drives us and we're very at one level conscious of it because it's there in our heads, but at another level very unconscious of the impact that it has on us and how internalized it becomes, even though they're just thoughts, they're not necessarily reality. So we're going to just practice that for a moment here before Melanie comes up, maybe we can just put the lights down again. I'm going to talk us through it because I think hopefully as we do more of this, we'll learn there is a way, there is a practice just to quieten our minds, to simplify our minds even, and allow ourselves space to let go of those other voices that we might sort of just descend to sink into the mind of God, this oneness with God that we're talking about. So just sit comfortably, rest your arms on your lap or in a place where they're not going to distract you. Take some deep breaths. Just focus on your breathing. There's a rhythm to our breathing of in and out, which is like a rhythm of grace, a rhythm that can allow us to drink in this living water and let it flow out of us, an inward rhythm and an outward rhythm. So just focus on your breathing for a moment. And then we're going to just be aware that we have lots of thoughts going on, lots of conscious thoughts. And we're not going to fight them. We're just going to let them go. And you might want to imagine those as like, your thoughts are like bubbles, and as you have a thought, just let it burst, let it go. Don't hold on to it. Don't pay attention to it. Or it might be like a leaf on a river just floating by. We're just going to let it float by. We're not going to pick it up. We're just going to, it's a thought, and let it go. So the idea here is just to let go of those thoughts, not follow them. And that will be tricky. So we'll get distracted and we'll follow some thoughts. And whenever that happens, we'll just return to our breathing as a reminder that, we're here. So let's just take a few moments of silence to let go of the flurry of thoughts in our head. Okay. So as we practice that kind of space, we're probably far more likely to get to a place where we can be aware of what's really going on, right? Aware of what those internal motivations are, because I think sometimes they're just hidden from us because life is moving too fast, our minds are moving too fast. Just one last thing I wanted to mention is this, that, again, it comes back to this issue of guilt, right? And we just don't want guilt in any way to be a motivator. I mean, sometimes it's appropriate to feel guilty about things, right? But guilt rarely motivates, or is rarely a healthy motivator of change. If you might feel you have circumstances, life circumstances, that really are overwhelming and you just cannot slow down, right? And I was talking with somebody recently, a single parent who had to work multiple jobs, raise kids, and who shared with me that when we talk about slowing down, it, especially in the past, it kind of felt guilt. It felt like, how can I do this? There's no option for me. And so if you're feeling guilty, I'm saying here, don't, right? Don't feel guilty. But also, don't resign yourself to, well, I just need to live a burnt-out life then because of my circumstances. But maybe reach out. And this is where I think what's so powerful about being a community together is that we can look after one another. Maybe the reason some of us are so busy is because we're isolated. We don't have the support we need. We're doing things that other people could do for us or help us with. So part of this is being vulnerable enough to reach out and ask for help and connect into community. And some of it is also perhaps those of us who have more space, who can create more space, have more flexibility to create space. Maybe our lives are very full at the moment, but we know we can make space. Part of the reason we need to do that is so that we can help others. We can make space for others in our lives. And that was the image we have of the early church, these early followers of Jesus. They were there for one another. There was this beautiful community that was created where they shared stuff, they shared time, they shared their lives. That's what we've been called to. So that's I think, a big part of what it means to simplify life, to make space. Melanie's going to come up and... Where is Melanie? Oh, yeah, Melanie, you're going to come up and lead us in communion, right?
Sorry. It is on. So I wanted to say a little bit about the challenge group that I'll be leading on simplifying life. And just to start out by saying I am not leading that because I'm an expert at simplifying life. I'm really excited about this because I want to do it and simplify life and focus on God. So really the goal is going to be to try to create more room in our lives for God, a God-centered life, to hear God, God's leadings and nudgings, to rest, like Matthew was saying, even if we're just finding mini Sabbaths, you know, like when you walk the dog or that kind of thing. So, and also to serve and to love others, to do, I have a habit of doing sort of like all the good stuff instead of looking for what's mine to do, what's best. You know, like I might have to drop some good things so that I can be focusing on what's really best for me. And we'll do that by developing an awareness of how we spend our time, just pay attention to what we're focusing on, looking at our motivations and priorities. Like Matthew was saying, maybe what are some of the beliefs that underlie and drive us? And so we'll be doing that through discussion, through practices and exercises. And again, I really hope to have it be a gentle, loving, safe context and atmosphere. It's not about punishment. It's just about freedom, like Matthew was saying. It's about empowerment and making choices for ourselves. So we'll do practices and exercises and disciplines, and they'll all be by your own choice because not one size does not fit all. So we'll look at all kinds of different possibilities and ways to help us make intentional choices to align our lives more with our values and those deep longings that we have. So we're going to slow down together, be more reflective, and practice some baby steps towards reaching that more graceful rhythm of life. So I hope that you will be joining one of those groups or doing them in your discipleship group. And they'll be, like Matthew said, for after the service for 3 weeks starting next week. So the challenge of busyness and distraction can really seem overwhelming. It does to me. And that risk of examining those underlying motivations and the values that drive our busyness can be scary. It's a vulnerable thing to do, and that's why we're calling this a challenge series. And the first step, then, is willingness. And willingness to engage with all this and to open up and surrender to our doubts and our fears and examine them as well. So as we move into communion, let's use this time to express our willingness to God, to let go and reorder our busy lives and anxious thoughts. And if we are following the way of Jesus, then we must, as he did on the night that he was betrayed and handed over to die, say, not my will, but your will be done. So on that night, Jesus knew what was coming for him when he shared the bread and the wine with his friends. And he asked them to please, please remember his life, how he lived, and his death. And that's why we practice this ritual every week, to remember Jesus and also to follow his example of putting to death his own agenda and putting the kingdom of God first. Not my will, but your will be done. So we do this, as Jesus did, by trusting that God loves us. We are God's beloved. God's plans for us are way more beautiful than anything that we could come up with on our agendas and to-do lists. So as we take the bread and the wine, or gluten-free crackers and juice in this case, surrender your plans and your agendas and your to-do lists to God. Let go and let God guide you into that peace and fulfillment. You can receive communion from the ministers at the side doors or take it at the tables here with other people. You can light a prayer candle or pray with a partner in the back corner back here about anything that's on your heart. Or you can write out your prayers at the last stations there where the frames on the wall are, and people will pray for you during the week. Or make a financial offering at the sides here. And understand that everything you have is a gift from God. Now let's pray together this ancient prayer from the 15th century. Join me. My Lord and my God, take everything from me that distances me from you. My Lord and my God, give everything to me that brings me near to you. My Lord and my God, detach me from myself to give my all to you. Amen.